Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's February 2nd, 2016. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. And thanks to our sponsor, Union Beer Distributor, supplier of world-class ales and lagers. If you want to tweet at beer_sessions, we'll be tweeting live all day. And Anne, it's Groundhog Day today.
Today is?
I'm only telling you because I never think of it as a beer day. And we got Danny Bruckert here from Six Point, and we just picked up some guys from Southern Tier at the bar here at Roberta's. But I never think of this as a beer day. And then this morning I saw that Lou Bryson, who's our great friend, beer and whiskey writer, every year he goes to some lodge near where the groundhog is in Pennsylvania, and he watches the groundhog and drinks in the morning.
So. Great. So I mean, I guess that this day is going to repeat for the rest of our life, every single day.
So it's the groundhog, and how does Groundhog Day relate to beer?
Everything relates to beer. Who cares?
What would you drink? We should have asked Lou to call in, because Lou Bryson, what were you doing, you know, at like 7 or 8 this morning, you know, in a bar on Groundhog Day? I want to know about that.
Well, I'd like to drink with Lou in the morning on Groundhog Day, because I've seen his whiskey collections. Pretty impressive from what
it's
I can imagine.
Good. Well, we put a lot of work into getting the show together, because you know, when I first started at Jimmy's Number 43, one of the beers that inspired me was the beers of Six Point, because they were new at the time, and one of the new breweries in the city, which kind of like led to the whole, I feel like, New York City kind of craft beer revival. And I don't know if you remember the first time you had Six Point, Ann, or some of the first New York City beers that you were drinking.
Yeah, I remember when it started kind of exploding everywhere. And again, the Bengali was, all of a sudden it went from 0 to 60, and it was kind of everywhere, particularly in Brooklyn, right? So, yeah, I think that's done really well for you, and it's good to see it's still doing well.
Thank you.
Yeah. But so Danny Brooker, you're the head brewer at the Red Hook Brewery of Six Point. So it's great having you on, and we're going to get into it a little bit. So I know that's where the brewery where Six Point started.
That's where it started, that's right. Yeah, over on 40 Van Dyke Street in Red Hook, Brooklyn. 11 years now, I think.
And you guys went through Hurricane Sandy, right? You guys,
oh, yeah.
You got some damage.
A lot of damage. The beer made it out unscathed, thank God. Tasted actually better. It got to sit on dry hops a little bit longer. So, but yeah, we got about 4 feet of water. So anything that was on the ground was just ruined. Pumps, boiler, things like that. They were just decimated. Salt water is horrible for a brewery.
Well, you know, we got New York City Beer Week's coming up in a few weeks, and it's nice to have you. You're going to be one of our featured brewers at the New York City Brewer's Choice.
Great.
So it's kind of nice to get a profile of you. So tell us how you got started in beer, the first time you made beer, when you started working at Six Point.
Well, you know, my wife, girlfriend at the time, got me a Mr. Beer kit. And, you know, I'm not ashamed to say it. I think a lot of brewers found their way into the craft brewing industry with Mr. Beer kits. That'd be an interesting study to see what the craft beer scene would be without Mr. Beer kits. But she got me a kit. It was an extract kit. And, you know, it came with the can of pre-hopped extract and the little yeast packet that was probably, you know, 75% dead yeast cells. And I made my first batch of beer, and, you know, it probably tasted horrible, but at the time I loved it, and it kind of started the habit, and it was, just went from there. Obviously, it was a hobby that got way out of my hands, and that's how I more or less ended up at 6.5 years after that, and homebrewing for a good long time. But
that was your first brewery job?
Yep, 6 Point was my first brewery job. Started there washing kegs, and I've been there for about 5 years now, and it's been a fun ride.
Awesome.
All right, man.
Yeah.
You know what's funny is I was reading about you, and I So you're a self-taught brewer, or were you taught as a brewer at 6 Point?
Yeah, when I started, yes, I was a self-taught brewer, but we all went through formal brewing education through the American Brewers Guild. So it was a great, great experience, especially for someone that was hungry for brewing knowledge. And, 6 Point takes education for brewers very seriously. So all the brewers that we happen to take on, we make sure that they go through some sort of formal training. So,
Great. And I was just saying that it's funny because we make a lot of comparisons with brewers to chefs, more so than winemakers or any other spirit makers. And I think it's one of the few professions left that has true apprenticeship, qualities, where it's like, yes, you obviously want to get trained and know the classic styles and be formally educated, but there's still that element of apprenticeship, starting off washing kegs, learning how each place does it. And everyone's a little different, and kind of finding your own style, I think, makes it so exciting, to see people's evolution. Very cool.
Well, that's for sure, man. And we also got the guys here from Southern Tier. You guys, introduce yourselves.
How you doing? Shane Henderson.
And I'm Brendan Koss from Southern Tier.
So, Ann just picked you guys up at the bar. These guys were doing a sales call at Roberta's. And you guys are also going to be part of the New York City Beer Week and New York City Brewer's Choice, even though you guys are from up by Buffalo. So what beer are you guys bringing down for New York City Brewer's Choice?
Well, we're actually launching a new beer right now called 2X Smash, which is kind of a coincidence because the New York City Beer Week does a smash beer. But the smash for the Beer Week represents more of state malt, state hop. We were making this beer for single malt, single hop. So it's still the same smash acronym, but we were doing it to highlight just the mosaic hops that we're using it and the specialty pale malts that we're using. Kind of just emphasize a little bit of that bright, juicy, tropical flavor that you get from Mosaics. Really fun beer. Really, I always call them sexy, appealing hops where they get in your nose and it just makes you really happy. But that's the kind of the beer we were making. And since we make the 2X series, of course, we went to make it a double. We love our 8% beers, so it happened to just tie in at the route. Around the same time.
Wow, that's great. So it's hoppy makes you happy. Is that what it is?
Exactly.
But you guys are also bringing in another New York smash beer, right? What can you tell us about that? Is it a sour?
So we're bringing in, it's called Local Sour. We've done the series before. It was more of a Western New York thing we did up there. And we've done a couple different varieties of different sour beers. And this one, we've done all New York State malts, all New York State hops, and it's a kettle sour. We've done some different varietals. We did it with some peach added into it at certain points, but this one is going to be just a straight kettle sour. It's a nice dry sour with a little bit of tartness in the beginning, but it finishes really smooth, and we're really excited about it to have it for Beer Week.
Oh, that's great, and we're really looking forward to having you. So back to Danny. So Danny, so you started washing kegs at 6 Point.
Yeah.
And what were some of the first beers that you helped make?
Well, once I got there, being the keg washer, you want to be. We can't curse on radio, can we?
I guess you can, right? Ann curses.
Does she?
Okay, Madam,
so I was the bitch of the brewery. I had to do all the dirty jobs. So I like to feel like, at least what I preach to my team is everybody has a hand in the brew. No one person is responsible for it. So at the time, if I'm mucking out or anything like that or watching the boil, I got a part to play in brewing the beer. And some of the first beers that I brewed at 6 Point were Righteous Rye, which is also the first beer that introduced me to 6 Point. When I first actually got to the brewery, I remember Diesel being one of the first beers that I actually tried. It was after a long day of keg washing, which, anybody that's washed kegs knows what a glamorous job that is. And it was about 8 hours in, and I timidly approached one of the brewers because I still felt like, wow, I'm so lucky to be here. I'm so lucky to be in a brewery washing kegs. And I asked, can I have a pint? really timidly, because I didn't want to. I was like, I don't want to step on any toes, but damn it, I'm thirsty. You guys got to, give me something.
I've been to the Red Hook Brewery a few times, and you definitely have a couple of kegerators there.
Now we have three fantastic, beautiful kegerators. They're vintage kegerators, and these things are great. They're like fridges from the 1950s. A couple of them look like R2-D2 units almost, but they just look beautiful. Great, great kegerators. They're made out of Portland. That's about all I know. I couldn't give you a name, but they look great.
The more I know about brewing, I took John LaPola's Bitterness class, the Beer 101, and I learned that for 2 hours he talked about different types of sanitizers and cleaning. We always forget how much hard work goes into making beer, because I love to drink it.
Yeah.
But I'm not really into making it, so.
No, you know, it's funny. When I tried to get my brother into brewing, I think he fell asleep for 6 hours and woke up at the end of boil. It's, you know, it's one of those strange, it's a masochistic hobby. I think it is. I mean, Jesus, you're cleaning all the time. And, you know, it's not fun most of the time. When homebrewers want to make the jump into craft brewing, let me see if I can say this right. I try to tell them you have to take everything that you love about brewing and times that by five. And then take everything you hate about brewing and times that by about 500.
That's a really good way to put it, actually.
That's professional brewing. You know, we all love it and we love what we do. We have to in order to keep on doing it every day, but it is a lot of hard work. Beer demands a lot from people, and, you know, that's one of the things that I like about it.
Well, I know you've talked a lot about styles of beer, and I know you're really a technical brewer, because I know you've talked about things like, you know, clear beer versus hazy beer.
Big. Those are some fun debates that we have around the brewery these days. And I'd be curious to hear what other people had to say about
it. Yeah, who wants to join
in?
What's clear versus hazy? I mean, I know there's some new styles. I think some people call it the New England style, or it's like something that Hetty Topper would be, which is kind of hazy, and it's like a juice bomb.
Yes, and it's, you know, it pertains really to hazy IPAs and beers that once, you know, should be clear are now becoming hazy. And, you know, one of the biggest arguments that I've heard for it are you get more aromatic compounds from the hops. And that very well could be because, you know, you're not putting the beer through any fining process. But, you know, that argument just doesn't fly with me. I mean, one of the things that immediately attracted me to craft beer, because it's, you know, really it's a theatrical experience. I mean, beer is probably the most theatrical beverage on the face of the planet. When you think about glassware being a stage almost, you know, you got to think, look at all the different stages we create for beer. We have goblets, pints, chalices, flutes, snifters, pony glasses. I mean, just a whole array of different glassware to show off this beautiful beverage that, you know, I think should be clear. Now, certain beer styles obviously should be hazy, like wheat beers. Those call for haze. But, you know, we've been seeing a trend now with IPAs where, you know, you're seeing a lot of hazy IPAs. Now, I'm not saying that these are bad beers. It just, for me, when you take the brilliance of a beer and you know, having a bright beer, I think it just lets the color shine through. It's eye-catching, and you have a beautiful head on top of it. It's, you know, people write poetry about it. And when you have a hazy IPA, instinctively, when I see that as a brewer, I think, something went wrong, or somebody was lazy, or, you know, something like that. And it's not that it tastes bad, but it takes away visually from something that I should be experiencing. I feel like I'm being cheated, and I know I'm going to get a lot of heat for this, but I'm glad that I could say it on radio. That's okay. I'm ready for it.
I sounds like you just wrote your own poem.
Yeah.
About beer.
I will.
As a brewer, do you like? Is there a difference when it's hazy, since you're not filtering out a lot of like the excess malt or hops? Is there easier to like some sort of breakdown it, or like? Is that a part of it, or is it just more of like you want to see just like that clear beer?
So, you know, it really depends on what kind of haze, but just for the purpose of this argument, let's pretend that it's chill haze, because mostly I think that that's what it is. It's a combination of a protein and a polyphenol, and what happens is when the beer cools off, these two compounds can link together. They can cross-link and come out of solution. So when it does that, it creates a haze, but when you warm it up, it will break apart, because it's only held together by generally weak hydrogen bonds. So when it warms up, they will break apart and then go back into solution. And that's why that's why chill haze is created when it cools off. Now, chill haze in itself is flavorless, all right? It's not going to add any flavor to the beer, but visually, people drink with their eyes. Now, I've been running a tasting panel at Six Point for close to a year now, and you know, it's amazing what the appearance can do to affect the flavor of a beer. It's almost like when you read the back of a wine bottle and it describes the wine. Then when you pour it and you taste it, you pick those things out. You almost instinctively tell yourself, "Oh, I'm going to taste blueberry now, or gooseberry or whatever the hell berry."
Brendan's like bobbing his head. What do you want?
I'll just say 100% how you convince yourself so easily just by appearance that your brain, before you even sip the liquid, tells you what you're going to have before it even comes to your mouth.
Totally.
Yeah. And you can convince yourself even after it's hit your palate and you've broken down the liquid, but you still have that lasting effect of what you had before you even went into the experience.
Pink elephant. Yeah. It's amazing. It really is. And that's why, you know, flavor is very important. Don't get me wrong. It's the most important thing, but I would have to say packaging and appearance and the visual appearance of beer is equally as important when it comes to
Have you ever done like a totally blind tasting, but not just of beer? I think that, I don't know if Sam Merritt used to do it, but I've had at some parties where they give you a total blind drink and you don't even know what it is. It could be whiskey, it could be rum, it could be beer, and you don't know what it is. And without that knowledge going in, you're right. People have been fooled thinking that a rum is a dark beer.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys ever have done an exercise like that.
The sweetness of it, yeah.
Absolutely. Guinness is a fun one because people usually drink Guinness and they think it's a light beer, light drinkable beer, but really it's that oil that they describe it as. But,
Well, and I trust so much that I know, a lot of times I like to drink at my place, Jamie's Number 43, or certain Good Brew Seal bars like a Spite and Dive, where I know what I'm getting, and I don't have to have that fear factor, you know? And I know what you're saying, because I'm like, if someone had blindfolded me and had me taste it, I would be freaked out. I mean, what if they put peas in your mouth, you know, or something that I don't like, but...
Yeah, you know, there's a funny story, if we have time, there's a funny story when it just going along what you're saying. We had brewed a smoked beer, and we were all very excited for this smoked beer, and the brewer at the time got so excited. It was done fermenting. He saw that it was done fermenting. He ran in the brewery, pulled a sample, smelled the beer. Oh, God, it smells so good, the smoke. And then I smelled it, and I thought, I'm not really getting a whole lot of smoke. What tank did you get this out of? He was so ready to smell smoke that he created the aroma. I mean, more or less, it was a wrong tank and the wrong beer, and there was no smoked malt in the beer. Yeah. So, you know, it was just, and he was a great taster, and, you know, I trusted his palate completely, but it just goes to show you that if you want to convince yourself that a flavor is in a liquid, you can.
That's hilarious, man. What about it?
It's just funny, too, in the age of
social
media.
It's so true.
Well, that's as well, but appearance, you know, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing with social media and Instagram and, you know, all of these photo-heavy apps, it's just important appearance, and the look of something is always really crucial.
Absolutely.
Shane?
We did a blind tasting.
Yeah, tell us about some blind tasting you guys have done.
Yeah, we recently just launched a beer just for New York City, which we're really excited about. We think it's a big thing for this market, especially was a Pilsner. But before we launched the brand, me and Shane went out and we got a bunch of Pilsners that we really respected and about 10, was it like 10?
It's like 10 to 14.
10 to 14 beers.
And we were just trying to figure out like what makes a Pilsner a Pilsner,
you know? They were completely different. That was the big thing for us, was that you can look just for aromatics or just for color of the beer, and none of them were any similar, but from taste, it was all how you perceived it.
Yep.
Wow, that's awesome. We have a great show going on. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, it's Groundhog Day, February 2nd. We found something to talk about, and it's like Lou Bryson goes early to a bar on Groundhog Day in Pennsylvania.
Sounds like you're setting up a knock-knock joke or something.
Well, we got to get Lou Bryson on. Lou, if anyone's tweeting out there, tweet Lou Bryson and tell him that big love to him. And next year we're gonna go to Groundhog Day in Pennsylvania with Lou.
Yeah,
that would be awesome. Fun. So, Danny, you were talking about hazy versus clear, and everyone started talking about blind tasting and my fear that if I was blind tasting, someone would put something like peas in my mouth instead of.
You never know.
Yeah.
Peas or bluesberries. Yeah, right?
You're turning violet.
But that was a great story. So the guy, you're saying that people, go back again. Tell us that story again about the smoked beer.
So basically the story was, we had brewed a smoked beer and we were very excited to taste it. So the brewer ran in and, grabbed a sample from the tank so he can taste it. And, he thought it was an unbelievably smelling, smoky beer. And it ended up being out of the wrong tank. So there was no smoked malt in it, but he had convinced himself of it. And, again, people drink with their eyes. So, the visual appearance of beer and, it's all part of the sensation. So, if somebody is looking for smoked malt, they'll create it in their head in some way.
Now, that's cool. Now, let's go to another talking point. So, I know you want to talk about clear versus hazy beer. Mm-hmm. What about stable foam? You never think about foam in beer that much. And I read something you were talking about, so now I want to learn more about it.
Yeah, well, foam, luckily for us with craft beer, we're generally using, these are generally all malt beers, so a stable foam shouldn't be something that's that difficult to achieve. But, when you dilute the protein content of a beer with say, adjuncts like rice or corn, then it's going to take away foam-positive proteins from your beer. There's a protein called protein Z that's found in malt that greatly affects foam. There are foam positive attributes to hops that greatly affect foam. So if you're brewing an IPA, a stable head on a beer shouldn't be a problem at all. And to me, the head on a beer is probably the sexiest part of the beer. I maybe you guys can speak to that too, but it's just a beer without a head. I mean, it's just.
Brendan wants to say something. You said sexy. He wants to talk.
Yeah, of course. I just had a story. I have a count on Long Island that I think about the story when it comes up. They had, they're a craft forward bar on Long Island, which is kind of a little bit behind where we are in the city. And they've had complaints and Yelp reviews about getting a 16-ounce pour or even a 12-ounce pour and getting two inches of head retention and getting complaints and bad reviews. And the owners of the bar, which I respect very much, have come out forward to that people and say, listen, the people that brewed this beer wanted it to be brewed this way. I would be feeling like I would be doing something wrong to the brewers themselves if I was to pour this beer and pour out all that head retention and give you a flat beer, because you'd be losing the character of what the beer was supposed to be brewed for. So I think I'm not a brewer, and I know that that goes a long way for the brewers, because that's, you made a balanced beer for a reason, and by doing that, you're losing a lot of the character of it.
Absolutely. I mean, it's the only beverage that has a stable foam. So why would you not want to show that off? It's a beautiful part of the beer.
And thank goodness for fill lines. That's always the easy. If you don't have a ton of time to explain the ins and outs, it's like, oh, no, it's intentional. It's like, especially with the Belgian beers.
And your Cicerone classes, was that something that was covered, beer foam?
Not really the tech. I mean, I didn't take classes. I took it before there were actual classes. It's not something. I don't know that it was covered in the test. Maybe from a pouring or a serving point of view, definitely not from a technical. It doesn't
It was more of the serving.
Yeah, the serving part of it, and having
emphasizing that that's part.
But it's crucial.
Beer.
I mean, it brings lifts the aromas up to your nose, the mouthfeel, the texture, everything about it is crucial. And it's funny because I'm one of those dorks that, like, if I get served a flat beer, I'll take a sip on the low and stir it up and get bring the head back.
Or the bartender's trick if the pint's sitting on the bar for a little bit. You stir it with a straw or something, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Just something. It's just so much more of a pleasurable experience than a flat beer, in my opinion.
Danny, a few years ago we had on Charlie Bamforth, who was like the UC Davis professor.
Yeah,
and I know he did some studies that were what's the best, soap to use on glasses to help with the head retention. And that was the first time I ever talked about it with anybody.
Yeah.
Tell us more about it. I never really thought about the importance of head on a beard.
Well, you know, there are certain things that can take away the head of a beer besides, a bad beer or just not, you know, foam stable beer. When it comes to glassware, you want to make sure that the glassware is absolutely clean. You want to use a detergent that doesn't have a scent. And, you know, you want to rinse with cold water instead of hot. You want to make sure that it's absolutely clean because if there are any oils, I don't know if you've ever seen this disgusting habit where people will wipe their nose, the oils on their nose, and they'll put their finger in the foam just so it dies down.
Is that what you guys do at Six Point?
I've never seen anything at
Six Point.
I've seen it a number of times. It makes
that's
me want to puke.
Horrifying.
But it's oils from your skin, yeah.
Yeah, it's so the oils.
Have you seen that, Brendan? You've done that?
Yeah, I've done it a million times. Yeah.
Why would you?
No, I've never done it.
I'm glad I'm not the only one. That would have been really weird.
It's the oils from your skin that makes the head go.
I mean, I could see that. I could see that it happens. I see the effect of it, but why would you do that?
Why? I don't know why. Just to get rid of the foam so they can take a healthy sip of beer. I mean,
drinking
you know,
games.
Some people just like to get down to business. But yeah, so oils greatly affect beer. And, you know, from a brewing standpoint, whenever you're trying to add a flavor to a beer, don't get an oil extract. we had to learn that the hard way. But oils will take away from the head of a beer. And, if the brewer is brewing with right ingredients, you shouldn't have a problem. But if you want clean glassware and you want to make sure that, you know, you don't touch the foam with your hands. Sometimes ladies' lipstick will have oils in it, and that could affect the head retention of a beer. But otherwise, clean glassware, glassware that isn't scratched, that'll be a nucleation point for carbonation. There's some glassware that you've probably seen that they actually do a laser etching on the bottom of the glass so it'll constantly keep feeding the head at the top, and I don't know, it looks really cool.
Yeah, it's great
technology.
The Spiegelau glasses, Duvel, like the IPA
yes.
glass, Duvel glass. I mean, all
the
Belgian beers are, for the most part, are onto that jam.
No, this is good, Dan. I didn't know how deep you were going to go, man.
I can go deep, bro.
We're going to go deep. But first, tell us about the beers that we've had. So we had what? The Bengali.
Yes.
And I know that recipe changed a lot, but it was one of my first beers that I really loved from you guys.
Yeah. You know, the way we approach beer at Six Point is. We're always constantly tweaking and trying to make the beers better, and not when I say tweaking, I'm not talking about big changes, but slight adjustments over time. I mean, beer is an agricultural product, so ingredients change, and the brewers have to adapt to different crop years for hops and for malt, and so the beer is always changing slightly, but. One of the beautiful things about working for a brewery like Six Point is standards are very, very high, and we don't spare any expense when it comes to standards. And that's how it should be for craft breweries. I mean, we're trying to make the best beer possible. So, yeah, it has changed, and, slightly over the years, and, it'll probably continue to change slightly as we continuously improve our product.
And what's the next beer? Cream?
Yes, cream.
What is cream?
Cream.
Can we note the spelling, please, as a Wu-Tang fan? I just wanted to be...
yeah.
The way it's written on here,
coffee
pretty cool.
Coffee rules everything around me. Mm-hmm. Cream. And it's a coffee blonde ale. And, we did a pilot batch of this in Red Hook, and it was called Pour Over. And, we've always liked to use coffee in our beer. It's always been a favorite ingredient of ours, and this is made using Stumptown coffee.
Smells like coffee grinds.
Yeah, coffee blonde ale.
So if you didn't tell me it was, going back to tasting, if you didn't tell me it was coffee, would I even know it was coffee? But now it's too late.
Absolutely.
If I looked at the beer, I wouldn't think it was a coffee beer, though. That's the cool part about it, is it looks like your typical blonde ale.
Yeah, right. And the funny part of, if you want to keep going on aroma, the funny part about putting coffee in a blonde ale, and this has happened not just with ours, but other blonde ales that have coffee, is if you really close your eyes and you take a whiff, it kind of smells like peppers. A little bit.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I can get that.
I thought that too.
I've always had this argument with him. We have an espresso beer that we make, and I always think jalapenos.
Yeah.
And I've gotten it from so many people, they don't get it, but I always get jalapenos from coffee.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. And, you know, I hate telling people because then that's all they can get. That's all I can get now, but now yeah. I've told the whole brewing world.
No, but I get that also a lot of times in smoky things and in yeah, Isle of Scotches yep. and different, you know, it's just that charred pepper skin. Yeah. But I really dig it.
Yeah, it's great,
so
you know.
When did this beer come out?
This beer just came out, boy, last month, I want to say. It came out with High Res, and it's, like I said, it's a coffee blonde ale, and we used a judicious amount of coffee, and we used a maltodextrin to balance it to give it a little bit of sweetness. And I really like it. It's what we set out to brew. Sean Carney, one of our brewers, did a great job on it, and it's a really tasty beer.
At what stage do you add the coffee?
We add the coffee on the cold side.
On the what? I'm sorry?
Cold side.
And so how do you... In what form?
For this one, we put it in large bags, just kind of like dry hopping.
Cool.
Yeah.
Is it grinds?
Yeah.
Is it full beans or...?
This was ground. Yeah, but you can use... You know, we've played with that, and... You get a significant amount of aroma with beans as well.
Yeah.
We just found that we liked ground coffee better. You get a little bit more.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people using cold brew all of a sudden now, too, on darker beers, and too. I feel like that's kind of just like a concentrated version of it. You don't have to use as much, but it goes a lot further.
Totally. Yep.
Going back to the oils, how does that affect? I mean, obviously, there's a lot of oil in coffee beans, no? Does that affect?
Yeah, and you know, it may affect it a little bit. I haven't seen too much adverse effects. I mean, you know, it could potentially affect it. I couldn't pin down the exact science, but I haven't found too much of an adverse effect on head retention from the coffee. So, you know, maybe the oils aren't leached out. I'm not sure, but you know, during the pilot batches and on to, you know, the production brew house, we didn't see any adverse effects.
Hmm. Yeah. I wonder if that would make a difference, like whole beans versus ground versus the, like, yeah.
Right.
That makes a
That's
difference.
That's a good question.
But it's good. This is really good stuff. And what beer are you making for New York City Brewer's Choice? Are you making the Smash beer?
So we're making a Smash beer, and we made a New York City beer choice beer. So the Smash beer, you know, I know you just said you guys made a sour, right? We have Dueling Sours. We have Dueling Sour beers, and maybe, you know, I don't know if I've heard right, but there may be more than two. Beers are hot right now, and we're very excited about them at 6 Point. But yes, we made a kettle sour, golden kettle sour beer from a dry hopped kettle sour golden. Am I making any sense?
We can put the words together.
Keep talking,
you guys can put that together.
See the beer now.
You just keep talking to me. We like the way you're talking. We're rolling. We're on a roll with Danny from 6 Point, and take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I never know what the music is, but it sounded good to me. What was it, Liz? Nobody knows. It was good. Well, we were here with...
Sorry. It was this band called Bad Citizen. They're so bad, they're good.
That was cool. Kind of rocking, you know?
Yeah, we're rocking. We're rolling. We always do.
Well, I think that's what... We got this guy, Danny Bruckert, here, who kind of seems like a rock and roll brewer dude. And we're just letting them go. So what's your next, you know, special point you want to talk about?
All right, well, you know...
Because we talked about head-on beer. We talked about
hazy
versus cloudy.
I mean, I guess if I had to talk about anything, I would have to, I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about sour beers and sort of the direction that I see Red Hook 6 Point going. We just recently purchased 2 fooders, 30-barrel fooders, which anybody that doesn't know what a fooder is, it's this beautiful, gigantic, basically a gigantic barrel. It's a wooden tank made out of oak. And the ones that we purchased are coming from Italy. They previously held Sangiovese wine and, you know, doing legitimate sour beers, inoculated sour beers are one of the things that excite all of us over at Red Hook. And, you know, I think right now that's what we're all talking about more than anything, besides the great lineup of beers that we have coming out. Sour beers, and they're extremely popular right now. But let me tell you, it's a good challenge for a brewer to bring in a lot of sour beer to a, you know, clean brew house.
Yeah, are you going to keep it separate a little bit, or how are you going to set that
yes,
up?
Yeah, there are definitely tricks that you can do. Separate lines for sour beer. You know, if you have to use a tank that also holds clean beer, you have to do a little bit of quality control on it. You have to, you know, make sure that the tank is absolutely clean after the sour beer leaves the tank. Different parts for every sour beer, and you know, it's a lot of extra work for a brewer. So, you know, you have to really be excited about the beverage to want to take on something that is going to demand that much more from us.
Danny, what do you think triggered the sour beer explosion? Because just a few years ago, you couldn't really get it. And, you know, there were things like, I remember like nine years ago, I had a keg of Cantillon Goose at Jimmy's Number 43. And I'll tell you, honestly, it was the first keg I ever had that didn't move. It took a month to go through that keg. We recently got the same keg a year ago and went in one night.
You know, it's a good question. And I do have a theory on why it's becoming so popular. I don't know if it's true or not, and it's definitely debatable. But I feel like sour beers step more into the wine realm more than any other beer that I can think of. You know, some of the aromas that you get from sour beers, like Horse Blanket, and, you know, I don't know how many of you own Horse Blankets, but it's, you know, earthy.
Danny, if you tell us, we'll go out and get them.
I think you're sitting on one,
actually. it's the new trend.
One, yeah. I always loved that descriptor, you know, Horse Blanket. Like, what the hell does a horse blanket smell like? But, you know, it's they're very complex beers, And the aroma that you get off of these beers are extremely complex. And, you know, I think people subconsciously relate to them a little bit more because I feel like they step into the wine realm better than other beers do. And that's just my theory.
So if I rub this horse blanket that I'm sitting on and I smell my and it has oils from my hand, and it'll kill the head on my beer, and then it'll taste like horse blanket beer.
We're having a rodeo over here.
Yeah, I'll agree exactly with what he's saying. It's I've seen somewhat of the cider trend as well, doing the same thing, where they're both kind of almost intermixing, where the cider is getting more dry and tart, the beer is going a little more drier and tart. They're going more into the wine realm of what you expect. And I think one of the things that is so appealing to people who weren't into craft beer before was craft beer has always kind of been like a hop forward thing. Yeah. And when we think of craft beer, you think of hoppy, bitter things, which is not technically true, but that's what people who aren't used to the beer world think of. So when you got these sour beers starting to catch on, you get the non-craft drinkers starting to realize that they like these sour beers. You'll get people come up and be like, have you ever had this sour beer before? I didn't know what it was.
Champagne-y and yeah. The yeast strands that they get from it. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and also for me, I think a crucial point, especially in bars and doing what we do, is that for the most part, you can get these intense, complex flavors without high alcohol levels.
Yeah.
And that I would choose that as the number one reason. And also, you know, you go out, you can't drink 5 double IPAs. You can't drink all of these insane
and do you
things.
Have, do you have a question for Danny?
Well, I have a bunch of questions, but I'll think.
Come on. That,
you go first.
All right.
I'm ready.
No,
in that case,
come on, ask
some
question.
I'm scared.
No, it's not. No, I'm just thinking off the top of my head. You seem to be quite technical and really excited. Is there anybody that you really respect in the brewing world or someone's style or a certain brewery that you just think, like, that is the epitome of what I'd love to do someday or who I'd like to work with?
You know, it's a tough question to answer only because I feel like I've had a lot of really good teachers that came before me. You know, every head brewer that was at Six Point, I walked away from that head brewer with more than, you know, when they started. And you know, I happily name names. I mean, Jan Matysiak, Pete Dixon, Ian McConnell, they were all great brewers that I learned a lot from. And you know, at ABG, I mean, my goodness, the teachers that we had there were fantastic. I mean, Steve Parks, Garrett Oliver, John Mallett. Just they have a bunch of fantastic teachers. And you know, it's I look up to all of them. I mean, you know, I feel honored that you guys call me a very technical brewer, because I don't have a big science background. But you know, it's like I said before, beer in itself demands a lot from people, and the more you learn about it, the more you realize how much it actually demands by making a good beer. And there's always trade-off with what you're working with, but you know, to be an educated brewer is a very challenging thing to be. And Danny, you know, we love it.
Jumping back, throwback. One brewery that always ties me to, you know, my interest in craft beer is, yeah, Adnams in England, and it goes back to the Michael Jackson's great book. Mm-hmm. You know, you guys recently did a collaboration or something with Adnams, because, yes, you had some of the brewers here. We walked out of Reverse. I'm like, you guys are with Six Points with Adnams, and I didn't even know they were here.
We had and still have an unbelievable relationship with Adnams, and all the people over there are just great. And you know, it was just this daydream for let me rephrase that. This was a wet dream for a brewer. We got to go to England multiple times, to a beautiful seashore town called Southwold. And we got to brew a beer in an English brewery, and we got to see them fill casks, and it was just a wonderful, surreal experience. Most home brewing books are written from an Englishman's, you know, take on brewing, and you know, coming from that background, to actually go there and drink a real ale, cask ale, you know, cellared and served properly, where you know there's still a relationship with the publican. You know, it's hard to find that relationship in the United States, and it's an art form in itself, but it was amazing. I mean, every bar I walked into, you could find a cask ale that was like 3.8%, and you could just drink this stuff all day long, and it was delicious, and the flavors were different, and it was a really amazing experience. And we still have a relationship with Adnams. And, you know, I don't know what the next beer coming up will be. But, you know, I think the last person to go there was one of our brewers, Marcus Lutter. And he brewed, I think he brewed Bengali Tiger. And, you know, it was really an amazing experience.
Wow, I could drink buckets of the Southwold bitter. To have it on cask, I can't even imagine.
It'd be amazing. Hey, so the next beer, just we have a Southern Tier on. Tell us about the Pils. And, you know, you've been a big fan of it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of the style in general. So if you can make a good Pilsner, I think that's a pretty benchmark for type of brewer that you are.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think Pilsners are a style that I think one of the most underrated styles, along with a porter. But Pilsners, for like, if you can make a quality Pilsner, it speaks volumes of a brewery. The time it needs to lager, the time it takes to have clear, clean water. So this Pilsner that we that we're drinking is the Southern Tier Pilsner, and we wanted to brew it to more of a German-specific style. So we actually filter our water specifically to mimic the water that you can get from Germany with the system that we have that can basically just reverse osmosis everything and clean it out, and then we add the necessary like salts and enzymes you need to make it a German water. We get all our malts and our hops from Germany as well to make this beer. We add a little twist, as we do with all of our beers, our Southern Tier twist, to add a little hopness to it, but it's not going to be over-the-top craft hoppy. We wanted to make it a little more, acceptable to the everyday person who might not be familiar with what a craft Pilsner might be.
But it's only available for us, right? At least for now? To New York City?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just New York City right now. Me and Shane were begging for this beer for a while. We love the style, and I think balance is a big thing for us. I love a lot of craft pilsners out there, but I think they scare a lot of people away because people go towards the macro beers that they felt comfortable with for a while to get them into craft beer. That we wanted to do something that wasn't too hoppy, that scared you away as a pilsner, that was still balanced, approachable, but had our balance of hops to the end of it. And we made this just for New York City, and it's been doing great for us. It's we love it, and the city's loved it so far.
It's real nice, and I'll tell you what, we're going to have you guys back big time. In the early spring, you're going to come down with one of your brewers, and we're going to do a big Southern Tier night. But back to you, Danny. What's the last beer? High res.
So
I'm amazed at the number of beers that Six Point's made over the years. And one thing when Six Point rolled out in 2005, that's what set you apart, is that you guys were making, like Shane was making, like a different beer every month.
Yeah, it's
I still can't remember all of them.
There were so many. But, high res. I mean, I think a lot of people are familiar with Resin, which is our double IPA, and we stepped it up a notch. And, more hops, higher ABV gave us high res. And, I expect to see, I hope I'm not jumping the gun on this one, but we're hoping to come out with low res, is going to be a session IPA later this year. But, high res is our triple IPA. Dear God, what is this thing? Is it 10%, something like that?
Tastes about 10
yeah.
and a half.
100-something IBUs. Insanely hoppy. Thankfully, we have plenty of hop heads in this company that I don't have to, be too hardcore of a hop head. I really love malty beers, but this beer is, very, very drinkable, very sneaky. Drink with care. It's we came out with it last month. We released it with cream, and so far seems to be doing very well.
What hops do you use?
We use, a lot of classic American hops, Citra, Cascade, Chinook. I think Amarillo's in there. As far past that, I'd have to really look at the recipe. It's funny. Out of all the beers we brew, I'm horrible at remembering what the hell I put in these things. And we brew a lot of different beers. So if I don't have a recipe in front of me, God, don't ask me about recipes.
Just don't put peas in it for Jimmy.
That's yeah, exactly. As long as there's no peas.
Gooseberries.
In it.
I'm not going to any blind tastings with you guys. But last thing, the culture. There's something special about the Six Point Brewery in Red Hook. It's the original brewery, and I've been there a few times. I've sat in on making beer for mm-hmm. Peace Beers. I've never made beers, and you guys have been so gracious. Tell me if one thing you think about Six Point that makes it unique.
Well, one thing that really makes it unique for me is, like you heard me talk about, brewing is, it's a very, very strict science. We used to hang a picture of Judge Judy up next to the mash tun because it's a science that you can't, if you cross it, you will get Judy justice, and you'll have to probably dump that beer down the drain. So it's a strict science, but for as serious as we take it and as much as we love it, I really try to focus a lot on making the relationship between the brewers I love seeing it be just a group of guys or girls that just love making beer and love coming into work, and it just makes everything so much easier. So that's one of the things for me that I find very special about that place, and it's why I keep coming to work every day, because it's not easy, and a lot of the times it's not fun, but we all have a really good time working together, and it's a fun place to be.
And you've got three kegerators.
And we have three kegerators.
Breaks and
that's right. And
crucial element.
Well, yes. We're going to wrap it up. Ann, tell us about that special Beer Week event you're doing at Taproom 307.
Yeah, we're featuring all you guys, actually. It's 40 taps, 2 casks of all New York beer. I think there's only 2 breweries that are repeating, and that's because it's collaborations. So it's 40 taps, 40 different breweries, and also a lot of really special kegs that we don't see very often. That's on Monday, February 22nd. Big industry night. We're going to have a blast.
That sounds great. Yeah. And a big shout out to New York City Beer Week coming up February 19th. Go to your favorite Good Beer Seal Bar, and you can drink one of these guys' smash beers. It's Simultap. That's a big one. They've got a big cruise on the 20th. Our event, New York City Brewer's Choice, where most of our favorite brewers will be there with special beers, and they're closing it out this year with a new cast festival. So check it out, New York City Beer Week. And you guys, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Just say your names again.
Thank
you. Thanks, Ann. Got this guy, Danny, a lot of new faces here.
Shane
and Brendan. Brendan, thanks for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. Thanks to our producers, Justin and Maggie, and our engineers, Liz and Jack Inslee. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right, yeah.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.